Welcome to our Global Scot podcast series, Past, Present and Future Proofing. In this series, we will hear Global Scots draw on personal learnings from their full and varied careers and learn firsthand how their industry has changed over the years. Global Scot celebrates its 20th anniversary in 2021. Like all of those who are invited to join the network, those we will hear from in this series are recognised experts in their field. So please sit back and enjoy this episode.
My name is Evelyn McLean, and I am based in Houston, Texas. I have been in Houston for 20 years. My current role is multi-hatted. First and foremost, I am a Global Scot, and I am proud to be part of the Global Scot Network. I am also an independent advisor to Bain & Company, and I'm also a consultant to the International Oil and Gas Producers Association. My other job is that I am a business and personal coach to a few private clients. I started my career in the far north of Scotland, just in the early days of the oil and gas industry, in a fabrication yard called Highlands Fabricators at Nigg Bay. I was part of a career development intake at the time, and it presented an opportunity to learn different roles within the company. We were building large steel structures for the offshore oil and gas North Sea. I spent 7 years with Brown & Root in various roles. Some of these roles were pretty tough. I spent a time in the payroll department, where I even walked through an active picket line to get to work. I was the only female traveling on a bus load of welders and platers and fabricators, 50 miles round trip each day. We had the advantage, I would say, of people coming from all over the world, and it exposed me to cultural diversity very early in my career. As a minority female at that time, it was not easy. I would never pretend that it was a walk in the park. It was anything but. But my upbringing as the firstborn of five into a family who had a construction business, I was quite tough and I could defend myself. I would attribute my attitude to getting the job done, my attitude to learning, meeting people where they are at, and being reliable as many of the attributes that helped me thrive through my career years. First and foremost, I am a collaborator, and I believe in win-win relationships. The fact that I ended up in supply chain should be maybe no surprise to many people, because I've always respected what the suppliers do. And as someone who has worked both sides, both as a supplier and as a buyer, as a client, it has been really important to me to value the contributions of suppliers. I find it really interesting that today, here we are, 2021, and the word collaboration gets used more than ever. And perhaps I was ahead of my time, because collaboration was in my vocabulary back in the 80s and beyond, and it has never left my vocabulary. So if I fast forward through my time in Aberdeen, from the BP Brown & Root partnering, I ended up supporting other clients, pretty much everybody, you know, Shell, Conoco, Total, Occidental, you know, there was just anybody with activity in the North Sea. Brown & Root had some association. And so I just continued to progress up through the ladder. I became the country manager for procurement and materials and logistics. Brown & Root merged with AOC International, so I had some M&A experience. I just continued to be tested, I guess, with more responsibility. And, you know, I think the combination of my upbringing and my character led to facilitated results, getting work done through others, being passionate about what I do. After a series of promotions in Aberdeen, I had the opportunity to transfer with Halliburton to Houston. They placed a big bet on me. They hired me to Houston to replace a seasoned Texan male to lead their North America supply chain in 2001. I stepped up And I basically just took the formula that I had from my Scotland leadership and applied that, and it worked. And then I went on to become a director, and then I went on to even better things. We're an industry now that is less popular than we once were. And people are in different camps about our industry. There are people that are in the camp that respect that you need fossil fuel among the energy mix. There are people who think that we've had our day. There are people who, truthfully, haven't taken the time to really understand what the industry does and how the industry does the work we do and what the contribution is to society. That's really what underlies the divided view. You know, there's a lot of great stories to be shared about what the industry has contributed both to individuals and to the collective. I would also suggest that as an industry, we did not adequately take society on the journey. So branding, messaging, communicating, and being more transparent about safety and about our environmental management agenda. And unfortunately, a lot of what we have done well, that story has maybe never been told sufficiently. In today's world, with information available so abundantly, my current work with IOGP, the reason that that has come about is that we have this perception issue, and that's affecting the choices that people are making relative to their career. And, you know, my work involves uniting the industry where, you know, I've been engaging the C-suite across the supplier community and the producer community to unify our message, to unify our initiatives and actions in order to improve perception around career opportunity and the like across the industry. You know, as I reflect on the future, the challenges facing businesses in general, notwithstanding our own industry, they're becoming greater challenges and more complex in nature. It's because of this, we need the brightest and the best talent to be available. And so one of the areas that I've been working on is to engage across the C-suites for producers and service companies in a discussion about the future workforce. Clearly, we will need access to the best talent to solve these increasingly complex challenges. It would not serve us just to have, you know, a predominantly male workforce, because the research is well publicized now that diverse teams and diverse organizations create better outcomes, both for the bottom line and in terms of problem solving. And so some of the work that I'm actively engaged in is how do we address the perception issues and how do we promote our industry as the place, the industry to consider for your work and where you may bring your innovative thoughts and creativity, because we are among the providers of energy to fuel everyone's future. Historically, we have been predominantly male. Historically, it hasn't been easy for women to work in remote locations. It hasn't been easy for women who maybe have chosen to raise a family to fit in with offshore rotations and the like. We as an industry have to look at ways to address these issues. If we take the pandemic has shone a light also on the challenges of work for many people, having to work from home and perhaps the duality of raising a family as well as holding down a job. I think there's an increasing awareness that diversity, equity and inclusion, or said another way, inclusion first, has to be the perspective that's adopted so that we can access the creativity and the deeper thinking and the cross-section of insights in order for us to tackle responsibly these challenges. There's a highlight that has been a common thread throughout my career, and that is I am very purpose-driven. I'm a purpose-driven person, and it has never been in question to me what the role of our industry is or has been to lift people out of poverty and to facilitate access to the products that allow for society to advance. So it's never been in doubt a question to me that being a purpose-driven person. As I think about some highlights, there's some that aren't quite notable. When I worked in the NIGB era, there was a structure that came as part of a subcontract from overseas. It was found to be defective. It was found to have, there was cracks. And a team had to be mobilized in order to recertify that structure. And I was selected from across the organization to work with two experts who were sent north from London to try and solve this problem. We were solving a major problem, defects on a steel structure that would delay the project from sailing out and in turn likely to delay the client from achieving first oil. So that was a highlight. I did that work well. I ended up supervising a lot of people. I ended up working some obscene hours, and I was recognized for it as my career developed. So that was number one. There were occasions where the work was very demanding, and I always had a can-do attitude. And so having a mindset of following through, stepping up in a crisis has actually served me well. That really facilitated a range of promotions that I achieved. I've had many opportunities, but they all came as recognition for how I approached my work, how I built the camaraderie within a team, how I created a culture of responsibility and delivery. And then if I fast forward, I was newly appointed the Vice President of Procurement Supply Chain Management in BP just prior to the Deepwater Horizon accident. And so I had another opportunity there to demonstrate my leadership, to show how I could perform during a crisis. And so beyond that, we had to stabilize the organization. I had interactions with suppliers that were very delicate at the time. But key to me is always to be respectful, to listen generously, and to try and find common ground from which, you know, our business partners can progress. And that has been a great recipe for me. As I've said, I've had more highs than lows during my tenure. I was one of the Halliburton representatives working across the industry in Aberdeen. And there was a program that we introduced, and it was a supplier development program. And this was to provide opportunities for small companies to learn how they may develop their offering for it then to be attractive to the industry. There was many things we did in the UK that even today I feel are ahead versus peers. And so that program of supplier development was something we were undertaking in the early 90s through the 90s. I remember working closely with the companies that I was partnered with, and we were basically serving in the capacity of a coach to these companies. And I see that Global Scott is performing a very similar role. And I think that the Global Scott network is one of the best that I have become aware of. And in particular, I think creating that ladder or that means of accessing experience in different countries throughout the world. I think a lot of us Scots, we have a lot of drive, and we might come from a small country, but I wouldn't underestimate how big the impact is that we as individual Scots or as collective Scots can have on society and in particular on our industry. I'm proud to be part of the Global Scot Network, and there's a number of reasons for that. As a Scot from the Highlands of Scotland, I was the first to get a college education in my family. I also saw how far my father went without a college education. And so I consider that I'm a bit of a hybrid of the book smart and the street smart. And I think Scotland has a lot of street smart and a lot of book smarts people. For me, it's about giving back. For me, it's about helping people who are much, much earlier in their career journey, where they have exciting new ideas, where they have ideas, yet they might not know how to develop these ideas. And those of us that are dispersed throughout the world, you know, we can absolutely serve as a, you know, a ray of light or as a sounding board to these individuals and small companies who are looking to test their ideas for marketability and so on. A lot of it has to do with just being proudly Scottish and never forgetting where we came from. Not everybody gets the same opportunities, but the least that those of us can do who have been exposed to the industry worldwide is to help others as they take their steps out into the broader world. And I think that for people perhaps not active within the Global Scot community, I invite you as someone who is looking to advance your ideas to take advantage of this community. I don't know what the collective years of experience is, but there will be, you know, hundreds and thousands of years of experience that is at your fingertips. As I look to the future, what do I see in my crystal ball? I do see the challenges will continue around perception. We have to work really hard to address some of these perception issues that we have with the newer generations today. But some of the challenges are not going to get easier. They're going to become more complex. As is said, nowadays, we're in the Industrial Revolution 4.0, therefore more digitization, more automation, more robotics, machine learning, and so on. In my view, there's always going to be a role for the human being. I feel very fortunate about that. However, agility and resilience are much more frequently used terms in our world, you know, as we know it today. And so the challenges that we are facing are really how do we provide capital efficiency in the most reliable, environmentally and socially acceptable way, whilst being responsible economically. And so we have this challenge where the problems are going to get bigger. The competition is probably going to be as acute. And so we can expect, you know, a competitive landscape, the eyes of the world watching closely, and it'll become a question of how do these ideas that are potentially solutions to challenges, how can they make the stage? How can they be recognized? Because it takes a lot of courage to try new ways of working. And courage is something that is very personal to individuals. Courage is something that means different things to different people based on their past experiences. And so, you know, Global Scots who have ideas where they passionately believe that their solution could absolutely move the dial on environmental, social governance, or just simply efficient delivery, you know, there will continue to be these challenges around navigating the system, navigating around pre-existing ideas, navigating around competition that is in the pipeline. I just continue to encourage our great thinkers to be idea rich and not to be afraid to experiment with your ideas. Be prepared to fail. My generation didn't celebrate failure like I would today. The only way to learn is to experiment first. And if that doesn't work, don't give up, try again. And our industry is going to be a fertile ground for these ideas that will serve to solve the problems of tomorrow.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode in our Global Scot podcast series. If you'd like to find out more about the Global Scot Network, you can visit us at www.globalscot.com.